Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening and welcome to Eerie House Radio. I'm Dale Kay from Spook Show, and I'm here along with
Dave Binkley from the Weird and Truly Bad Movie and the upcoming Spaceship One. Hey, Dale, I took as much caffeine as I could, but I just can't replicate Gar last night.
We'll do the best we can. So good to have him back, isn't it?
It is. It is.
And he was in rare form.
He was. He was hyped up. He was hepped up on coffee, and it was great to have our brother from another state here.
Our brother from another mother.
But it was a lot of fun having him back and having some real moral of the story, Gar moral of the stories, not the fake ones like I have tonight. You know, what can we say?
You when do you well here, enough. Hey, it's better than no moral at all.
Well, and that's the mood fitness, because there sometimes we have no morals, so we're okay.
Yeah. I'll bet you I have that problem worse than you do, but who knows?
Oh my! So hey, we've already got some fun people in the chat ready for some great old time radio tonight, and got a couple of fun ones tonight, Dale, from the CBC going to Canada. I think we're going to Canada next week, too. Yes, we are. So 2 weeks in a row, we'll be going to Canada. But tonight, it's the Mystery Theater. And then another tale from the files from Mr. Keen, Tracer of Lost Persons. All
plus,
kinds of fun.
Dave cooked up something more. A little spoof of Mr. Keen by Bob and Ray. That'll be coming up again as well.
By the two and only Bob and Ray. Absolutely. So... we got that, and we got some wheel, we got some, you know what, Dale, I really feel like I got an extra nickel in my pocket. I really feel like tonight we'll need to get that jukebox going, so.
Yeah, the radio jukebox. I love playing those old radio commercials with products
right.
that are long gone, or some are still around, but
most of them are
long gone.
Yeah. That reminds me, I was roaming around an antique mall today, and I saw... a Jif jar. It looked like from about the mid-1960s.
Was the peanut butter still in it?
No. And it looked like it was about 18 years old, a good old glass jar. And I mean, it was about $18 for an empty jar of Jif, man, I tell you.
Yeah. Hey, you know what I always look for when I go to places like that? I never find them because they're very reminiscent of our, you know, we're roughly the same age in our late 50s, gang. And I remember the Flintstones characters on the Welch's grape jelly jars. That you would keep those, and they would make fine drinking vessels.
Well, for a shot anyway, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah,
I used to do
shots of funny face.
Well, there you go.
Just practice it for later in life.
That'll work. That'll work.
I like Goofy Grape the best.
Goofy Grape. But all kinds of neat things I was looking at all over there, and I very seldom buy. It's more of a thing that my wife really enjoys going out and finding. I found an old a replica of an old microphone. I did pick that up, but outside of that, that was it. You know, I did a lot of looking and a little bit of touching, but only one purchase. So,
well, then you did well. Sometimes I go, if there's a lot of cool stuff, you know, it's like I gotta have this. This will work in a show. Someday. We're continuing our weekend, though, folks. We're continuing our weekend here with a little cranium candy for your brain box. That's right. We're talking about skulls.
That's right. We've been just knocking our skulls together trying to get these shows. So here we are.
We almost went out of our skulls, but Dave came through with some more fine programming. And we talked about different skull memories. I remember Screaming Skull. Dave didn't have too many that came to mind, but you folks there in the chat, Serpent Society and Fog's Bay, if you have any good skull memories, don't hesitate to share with us, because there's been a lot of movies where, you know, gosh, what's a pirate movie without skulls?
That's true.
The Skull and Crossbones flag.
Skull and Crossbones, absolutely. You know, and Skull and Crossbones, as it was in our second show, is really more of a sign of poison than it is of anything else. And again, of course, Skull and Crossbones was kind of a pirate flag. They took down their national flag if they were carrying one and put up the pirate flag and then raided the ships.
This is how far we've come in society, Dave. Back in those days, all you had to do with a jar of poison was put a skull and crossbones on it. Everybody knew it, man. Don't drink it, stupid. Now, you've got to put in very, very tiny print, mind you, a warning label that explains in great detail why drinking poison is bad for you. And please don't sue us because we're telling you that it's bad, so don't drink it, you idiot.
Right. Here's an example of that. I was talking to a guy, and he asked me a question. Do you know why these lawnmowers have those safety switches to turn on the mower with, right? It has to be locked in by your hand in order for it to run. Well, I said, no. You said, I guess for safety. He said, well, no. It was one of the big places like John Deere or one of the big manufacturers got sued because the guy was using his lawnmower to trim his hedges with. He was holding it up and trimming his hedges with it. But it came down and cut off part of his foot. And nowhere in the book, on the box or anywhere, did it say you could not trim your hedges with a lawnmower. So they put that on there so it would automatically shut off if you let go of that. As far as I know, that's a true story. But they sued for that and they won. The company, the lawnmower company lost because the guy was trying to trim his hedges with a lawnmower, because nowhere in the booklet, on the box, or anything.
Yeah, I think Winnebago or one of the big RV makers got sued the same way. Some idiot left the cabin of the RV with the RV on cruise control, and nowhere in the instructions did it say you have to attend the steering wheel.
Oh, cheese and crackers.
Put it on cruise control. And, like, I don't know, $100-some thousand RV, and they had to eat it. Unbelievable.
Hey, I'm just hit the road. I hit the cruise control. I'm going to go make myself a peanut butter sandwich. Where's that 1965 jar, Jeff?
Yeah, I'm on cruise control. What could happen?
Crackers.
So who's dumber, that person or the jury that awarded the money? Only time will tell.
You know, the only smart person, I guess, is the stupid lawyer who cooked up the lawsuit and won.
Yeah. Yep. There you go.
Because the guy that did it was stupid. The jury, I don't know how you could possibly come to findings like that. When did legal findings have to lose all common sense?
When did common sense become not common? It went the same way, a common courtesy. But let us be courteous to our kind listeners who are keeping the chat of skulls alive here. as we prepare to play you some great radio. Dave, where will we start tonight?
You know what? Gar was wanting to be here for this, I think. But yeah, we've got the Mystery Theater from CBC. This is a wonderful tale. Gar was really into this one because Gar gets to listen to all the programs before, so we can prepare his morals. And he was not real happy that this one wasn't on the slate for last night. But that means we're real happy because it is. And there's not really a whole lot out there about the Mystery Theater on the CBC. It was a radio series that was written, adapted, and produced and broadcast by the CBC from 1966 to 1968. Your chills, thrills, mystery, and adventure, it says here, to make up the stories from classic series from the CBC, including 10 episodes of the ABC Mystery Theater, which originally, before it was the ABC Mystery Theater, it was the Mole Mystery Theater. So there are about 34 of these episodes out and about, and we have one of them for everyone tonight. About
the screaming skull.
A little horrific tale about a screaming skull.
Yeah, it has nothing to do, by the way, with the public domain film shown by many horror hosts. One of my favorites, and we discussed it. It's one of my early childhood fear / chuckles that I recall. A scary movie, kind of, for its day, the 50s. But this radio show I'm looking forward to, where Gar always listens to them before, I deliberately do not. I like to listen with the audience. So if it's your first time, it's my first time. And here we are.
Yep. So we're looking forward to this interesting tale on the sea, from April 1st, April Fool's Day, 1968.
Time to tell tales of the unaccountable, of apparitions by night and phantoms in shadow. Time to tell strange stories of fantasy and the supernatural.
Mystery Theater presents The Screaming Skull, a tale of the supernatural by George Salverson, based on a story by E. Marion Crawford, and starring Tommy Tweed as the captain and Hugh Webster as James.
This is the house, Captain?
It is, James.
Nice place for an old sea dog to retire to.
It's a pretty little property, just the thing for an old sailor like me who's taken to gardening.
You won't be gardening in this weather.
That's true, James. Let's get in out of the wet.
Listen to the wind and the sea. You must feel right at home here.
At home? Come in, James. Close the door.
Right.
Sit there by the fire. I'll put something in a glass to warm you.
Wonderful. It's a night for a burning log on the hearth.
And for Holland gin. This is the same I brought Luke from Amsterdam 25 years ago. He never touched a drop of it.
Luke was your cousin, Captain Braddock, wasn't he?
He was. That's how I came by this house. After he died and his boy Charlie was killed in South Africa, there were no relations left. Here now, see if this doesn't warm your blood, James.
Thank you. Wasn't there a Mrs. Pratt?
Yes, there was.
What happened to her?
Well, she died before Luke.
Oof! Strong stuff, Captain.
Listen, you can hear the tide. Gloomy sound, isn't it?
Yes. Do you remember the German ship we sailed on?
Listen. Did you hear that, Captain? Yes.
Someone screamed.
It must be from the beach.
No, it isn't from the beach.
Oh, someone may be in trouble. We'd best have a look.
Sit down, James. No one's in trouble.
Well, why do you say that? You said you heard it, too?
What's interesting is that you heard it, James.
What do you mean by that?
There are always people who think it's the wind or my imagination.
Then what was it?
Put another stick on the fire, will you?
Yes.
It's only something to do with the wind and the tide. Yeah, this is good enough for old sailors like us, James. I don't think Mary Pratt was very happy here.
Might be a little gloomy for a woman at that.
Poor woman. I suppose in a way I was responsible for her death.
What's that, Captain?
It was on a night like this. I was at home for a spell, waiting to take the Olympia out on her first trip.
That voyage when she broke the record?
No, that was the next one. Oh. But that dates it.
1892?
In November. In this very room it was. Oh, the weather was dirty. Pratt was in his usual bad temper, and poor Mary Pratt's dinner was a failure.
You see that, Captain? My wife is trying to poison me.
Luke, he's joking, Mary.
Oh, I wish he were joking.
Welsh rarebit, raw turnips, and half-boiled mutton. Charles, if you ever marry, don't marry a fool.
You see what he thinks of me? You see how he goes on.
On second thought, perhaps it's better to marry a woman foolish enough to poison you with Welsh rarebit instead of spun glass, a chopped horsehair.
Oh, you see, Luke's only joking. After all, he's a doctor. He knows all the antidotes, eh, Luke?
Not for some things.
Oh, of course. There was that woman in Ireland, the one who did for three husbands before anyone suspected a thing. Be glad you aren't married to one like that, Luke.
How did she manage it?
Well, her fourth husband managed to keep awake after she drugged him and caught her at it.
Caught her at what?
Well, she had a little horn funnel, and she put it into his ear.
This sounds rather ridiculous, old man.
Well, that's what he thought, until he saw her coming with a ladle filled with melted lead.
That's rather funny. Yeah.
Oh, that's terrible. Charles, that's awful. Oh, don't you dare tell such a story here, ever again.
In this very room it was. James, if I were you, I would never tell ugly stories about ingenious ways of killing people. Listen.
What? You heard that sound again, Captain?
No, that was the wind backing up to the southern again. I can tell by the sound.
Are you trying to tell me that Mrs. Pratt killed her husband?
No, she couldn't have. You see, she died that same November.
Good heavens, man.
Yes, Luke was a lonely man after that.
Lonely?
Oh, I could see it. I came to see him now and then.
And he looked lonely?
Oh, yes. Very worn and nervous. That last time I saw him, there was the thing about the dog.
Thing about a dog?
Yes. Luke was so thin, his head looked like a skull with parchment stretched over it. And his eyes had a sort of glare. He glared at me when I asked about the dog.
I killed the dog.
That sweet tempered old bulldog.
I could stand it no longer, Charles.
What, the dog was ill?
No. But he used to climb into that chair where you're sitting now.
Yes?
That was my wife's chair, you know.
Well, I know, Luke, but after all...
You never saw him do it. Old Bumble used to sit there and stare at me. We'd stare at each other, thinking over old times. And then the fool dog would begin to shake all over and set up a howl as if he'd been shot, and then he'd run and hide under the sideboard, making the strangest noises.
Why, poor old Bumble.
I couldn't stand it. He didn't suffer at all, Charles. I put dionine into his drink to make him sleep soundly, and then I chloroformed him gradually so that he couldn't have suffered, even in a dream. He didn't suffer.
Well, I believe you, Luke.
He didn't suffer a bit. And it's been quieter since then.
He said, it's been quieter since then. Now I know what he meant. He meant that he didn't hear that noise so often Perhaps she thought at first that it was old Bumble in the yard howling at the moon. Perhaps that's what he thought.
Good heavens!
It's not that kind of noise at all, is it, James?
That sound. What is it, Captain?
Don't be frightened, man. It won't eat you. It's only a noise. And a noise never hurt anyone.
That's all very well, but what is it?
When I don't understand a thing, I call it a phenomenon. And I don't take it for granted that it's going to kill me. Besides, what is there to prove Luke killed his wife?
Is there a connection?
Did I say there was?
Well, you were. What did they say she died of?
She died in bed a few days after I told that story.
But of what?
Heart trouble.
But you don't believe that.
Why not? Luke called in another doctor and he believed it.
But you don't.
Of course I believe it. Only pour yourself another drop and I'll show you something.
I think I will.
I keep it locked in this old roller top desk of Luke's. That's where I found it, you know. Ah, here we are.
You mean that pistol?
No. That's the old pistol I bought in Rio for a souvenir when you and I went ashore. Remember the Leofit, James?
Mm-hmm.
Grand vessel sailed. Those were the days, James.
What were you going to show me?
I imagine Luke was fond of deep sea fishing. Probably used this for casting a sinker for a nightline. Do you think, James?
An iron ladle?
You can see there it was hardened in the bottom of the bowl. The melted lead. Why, James, you dropped your drink. I'll get you another. You won't mention this, will you? After all, Luke's dead now, with an honest man's tombstone at his head. There was trouble enough about his death as it was. No reason for James Traherne to hear about a thing like this ladle. Here you are.
Thanks. James Traherne?
He's the sexton, and he works in my garden.
Works in your garden?
Oh, I didn't tell you about that. It was when I retired, and having inherited the property from poor old Luke, I moved in. This James Traherne showed me through the house and told me the story and showed me the thing in the cupboard.
A curious thing to keep in the cupboard? I mean, when you consider this here's the bedroom.
This hatbox?
Same as they found by old Luke down on the beach.
When he died?
That's right. You remember the verdict? By the hands or teeth of some person or animal unknown.
I know. I heard all about that. Some big dog chewed him to death.
That don't horrify you, Captain.
Oh, I suppose. I've seen a good deal around this world, however.
Have you ever seen a bit of interior decoration like this?
What is it?
Hat box. Open it up, Captain.
Oh, you're very mysterious, Traherne. All right, I'll open it up.
Very pretty and polished. And white, ain't it, Captain?
A skull.
It's what it is, all right. Found by him when he was dead there on the beach.
Oh, what of it? Luke was a doctor. It's not unusual for a doctor to have a thing like this.
But it is unusual for a thing like this to roll. When he fell dead, mind you, not down the slope of the beach towards his feet, but up the slope of the beach toward his head.
Oh, what?
It rolled up the beach.
Oh.
From where the open hatbox was found.
Oh, phenomenon.
This here phenomenon lay right up against his poor throat, all broken and bruised by, like you say, Captain, some big dog. Do you notice something else?
No.
Here, take it.
Well?
Give it a shake.
Huh?
Go on, shake it.
All right.
Now, ain't that a peculiar sound?
There's something inside.
Pretty small, very nice shape to it. Perfect teeth.
Well, it's only a medical specimen.
Wonder where the lower jaw got to. With them teeth, she would have had a pretty smile. Wouldn't she, Captain?
That's what he said. After that, I got something into my head. Oh, I don't mean anything supernatural. As far as that goes, I'd rather face any shape of ghost than a fog in the channel when it's crowded, eh, James?
Oh, what was it you got into your head?
No, there's no sense to it.
Didn't she have a Christian burial?
Well, certainly. She's lying in the churchyard where Treherne put her to rest.
It's monstrous.
To suppose her husband kept her skull in her old hatbox in the bedroom?
It's ridiculous. Captain, you're playing me for a fool. Pour me another drink.
Yes, it's ridiculous.
I suppose he had done. I mean, the ladle and the melted lead and all that. But then,
why did he do this other thing?
Yes.
Why? He could have been afraid of something else that I told him when I told that story.
What?
Well, the woman that did for those three husbands, they dug up the three skulls, you know.
And?
And in each, there was a small lump of lead rattling around. That's what hanged her. I suppose he'd remember that was the vital evidence.
Captain Charlie Braddock.
James?
You old fraud, you sea dog, you pirate, you old devil.
What, James?
Get me another drink, you dog.
what is so funny?
You invite me here to this haunted-looking cottage of yours by the gloomy sea, and you set me down by your fireplace and spin me a yarn like... You old lying fraud of a sailor.
Ha-ha, but who is going to have the last laugh? We'll find out in just a few moments.
Yeah, you know what, listening to that, I got to hear some of the same music that they used in the Black Museum that Orson Welles did, and yet that was a different country. So it must be a package that was available to them for the music.
Could have been.
Or could have been owned by, you know, because... if you look on the Internet Archive, you can find a lot of the music from the Hanna-Barbera stuff. It was actually stuff that was made in the UK, and it was put on 78 over there in the UK, which certainly has outlived its 50-year time limit on copyright here, not there, but here. And you can find that on there. I've used a couple of them. for weirdness really bad, so. But it's fun when I hear yep, like that there. It's fun when I hear some music from that even in the 50s that crept over to the different network programs of even some of the sci-fi, that the sound effects or even some of the music beds or some things like that. I hear this here on this Canadian series that was from, you know, the late 1960s when you'd hear the same stuff that was in the Wax Museum or the Black Museum that was done in the mid-1950s. Actually, an Australian production that was part of it was recorded in London where Orson Welles was, so.
I think that whole thing is a neat kind of sub history item, the different music that's been used around. I know the first time I saw Teenagers from Outer Space was shortly before I hosted it for the first time on Dale K's Spook Show, and there's music in it that was used later in Night of the Living Dead and a lot of the public domain movies. A lot of Corman's uses a lot of the same music in his various films.
Right, and the very first film we hosted for Weirdness Really Bad, The Ghost Walks, And there, that was from the very, very early 1930s. And if you catch a lot of movies from 1931, 32, you can catch them with the exact same music opening as that movie was. It's a fun thing to find these things. I remember when I heard the Johnny Dollar theme, that, you know, when they took the year off in 54, came back in 55 with Bob Bailey as Johnny Dollar and had that new theme. I said, that would be so great. It's in public domain. Why doesn't anybody use it? But then I found out later on that was the theme to the Dick Tracy TV show.
I'll be so darned. Actually,
they reconstituted it and used it for Johnny Dollar.
Yeah, I even remember in Lost in Space, most of it was, you know, John Williams stuff, but there would be snippets of Bernard Herrmann's music from The Day the Earth Stood Still.
Yeah.
There would be a little bit of that in there.
But remember, at the time of Lost in Space, it wasn't John Williams. It was Johnny Williams.
Right. Johnny.
Music by D. Williams, yes.
Johnny.
Yep.
Little Johnny's come a long way since.
Yeah, I wonder what happened to
Stanley Robinson.
I wonder what happened to that guy.
Never heard from again. Who knows? There's a John Williams now, but Johnny, no one knows.
Yep, nobody. Yeah. And that makes go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say how interesting I'm finding this Canadian version of Mystery Theater. And this story of Screaming Skull is not too different from the movie. The more I listen, I think during this segment, I'm going to do a little research and see if there's any connection between the two.
Well, again, this was an adaption from something. I know, as I was pulling this particular story, there were a couple other, at least one other, if not two other Canadian versions of this story out there. One of them was not a real good recording. This was a pretty darn good recording. So I did go with this one. But I think there were at least three versions out there of this story. It's like the Monkey's Paw. That's out there in a lot of different places. A lot of people did another version of that.
And I do believe Screaming Skull is based on a short story or a novelette or something like that. So maybe they have the same story. Maybe not. I'm going to do a little research and see if I can find a connection.
Very good. Well, let's give you time to do that as we conclude this program of the Screaming Skull from Mystery Theater.
Thought he'd remember that was the vital evidence. I've often wondered how he managed it. What do you suppose he put in its place?
Do you mean that sound came from your bedroom,
James? Let me tell you about the night I tried to get rid of the thing. It's not happy anywhere else, you know. It wants to be in Mary Pratt's hat box in that cupboard. At least I think it does. I sleep in Luke's old surgery now, you know. But then when I first came, I slept in the bedroom. Well, I slept well. You know, an old sailor, no natural sound disturbs you. Not all the racket of a square rigger hove to in a heavy gale. But any unnatural sound, and you wake in a moment. That's how it was every night at exactly 17 minutes past 3. I wonder if that was the hour she died. Then I would hear it and be exploded into a wakeful terror.
What? Not again? I won't have that again. I won't stand this anymore.
Now, I'm going to settle this. I'll take you and... Yes, the window. There. Here you go, hat marks and all out the window. Heaven blot out my ears, kill my hearing, deafen me, but never let me hear that again.
I will not stop screaming. Then when I thought I would go mad, it fell silent. I sat on my bed, listening, waiting. Hours passed. Then I heard a totally unexpected sound. Someone at the door. You can't see the door from above, I called out. Who's there? Who is it? Who could it be, I thought. Oh, some old country fellow, stone deaf. I took my candle and went down to open the door. I set my candle down on the hall table. And then, when I opened the door, the wind blew it out. No one there. I shut the door. I lit the candle. There it was, at my feet, where the wind blew it in. The light and shadow from the candle playing in the hollows of it. So the eyes seemed to open and shut at me. We stared at each other. I spoke to it. What do you want? It wanted to go back to its cupboard. I knew that. But I stared at it, and I refused to move. I stared, and it stared back, and I waited. I hurried outside. I found the hat box. I ran inside, put the thing in the box, and returned it to its cupboard in the bedroom. After that, I slept in Luke's old surgery. But still, it screams at me. It hates me. I was the one who told Luke the story, you know. Listen, James.
What?
The wind and the tide.
Captain, you have to go on with this story. Can't we talk about old times?
Yes, yes, old times. Yes. Remember old Blocklot?
A carpenter, wasn't he?
Yes. On the Clontarf.
I remember.
He used to say, when we were hove to in a howling gale.
I remember.
Biddy de boer pebble store, his night pies.
That's just the way he'd say it.
Yes, and always on a night like this.
Listen.
So that's what it is.
What, James?
You old fraud. That's the classic sound of wind howling in the chimney.
James, I'll get the thing and show it to you. Here's the box.
That's it?
Yes. My candle went out as I brought it downstairs.
Well, put the box down.
It went out, but that was the draft from the leaky window on the landing. Well,
put it down.
Yes. Did you hear anything when I went up?
Yes.
There was another scream. Whatever that scream came from, it wasn't from this.
No?
I had the box in my hand when I heard the noise, and here it is now. So we have proved definitely that the screams are produced by something else.
The chimney.
To think I could have been so weak as to fancy that the poor skull could really cry out like a living thing with the agony of melted lead poured through the ear into his brain.
Then don't talk that way, Captain.
No, I won't.
Well, if you're going to show me Luke's medical specimen, open the box.
Yes, I will, James. You see how carefully I wrapped it in brown butcher's paper and tied it with string. Mm-hmm. Now, we look at it under the bright lamp. It's awful to think that the poor lady used to sit there in your chair where the dog Bumble later stared at Luke in just the same lamplight.
Oh, come now, Captain. Let's have a look at this.
See?
Here's the label I put on it to seal the strait. And here's what I wrote.
Once the property of the late Luke Pratt, M.D., one skull. Well, open it, Captain.
I often wondered what sort of hat it was that came in this box.
What kind of hat?
A gay spring hat with a bobbing feather and pretty ribbons. Strange if this same box should hold the head that wore
open
that...
Open it.
Yes, yes. Open it. No. Strange. I don't have the strength in my hands anymore, James. Can you break the string?
Yes. There.
Now.
Oh, good Lord, take the lamp.
The window.
James, the lamp.
Close that window, Captain.
Yes, 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 I'll close the window, but don't let the lamp go out if you can help
it. How can I help it if you don't close the blasted window? Now, shut out that gale.
Yes, please. Here. The boat was only half down. It won't blow open again.
That's the advantage of these old-fashioned windows with the bolt. Now, the hat box.
Where is it?
Where? Did it blow off the table?
Oh, must be here.
Ah, there it is, on the floor. Hand it up there, will you, James?
There you are. Now, open it.
There. You see? The lid comes off easily enough. There. Now, look, James.
At what? There's nothing in the box.
What? Empty?
Empty, Captain.
No, that must not be.
Captain, there never was a skull, was there?
Never a skull?
No skull. You imagined the whole thing.
Yes. Yes, I imagined it. Turn up the lamp.
Yes. You've been living alone too long, old friend.
I can't understand. Do you suppose the sextant Traherne suspects something? Do you suppose he could have stolen it?
Why would he steal it?
What's that? On the floor.
Where?
There, by your foot.
No, Captain, for heaven's sake, it's nothing. Nothing at all, but... But this...
But what?
This...
Then I'm guilty. Then Luke did listen to the story. Then the thing does hate me. And this fell out just now when the box blew to the floor. It hates me.
Why would it hate you?
Because I told the story. And there you have the end of the story. A round ball of lead.
Then... Where's the skull? Do you want me to answer?
No.
No, I'm not going to answer it, Captain.
It hates me. I told Luke the story. How did it get out of the box this time?
This is no affair. Captain, I'm going. Are you coming?
Where?
Out the other way, the back way.
No. It hates me. It blames me.
Then I'm going. You can come or not.
No, it hates me.
Come with me, Captain. Leave this and come with me.
No.
Then God help you. Because I can't.
James. James! Do you want of me? Don't do that. Don't. I know the frightful agony, the hot lead, the melted metal searing into the brain. Don't blame me. I know what you want. Here it is. My pistol. The old pistol from Rio. You remember, James? No, I won't answer. Don't blame me. Don't blame me. I won't open the door. I knew what you
want it.
Mystery Theater has presented The Screaming Skull, a tale of the supernatural by Marion Crawford, adapted for radio by George Salverson, with Hugh Webster as James, Tommy Tweed as the Captain, Drew Thompson as Luke, Marion Waldman as Mary, his wife, and Eric Clavering as Treherne. Sound effects were by John Sliz, and technical operation by Robert Burt. This is Bill Lorne speaking.
And this is Dale K speaking. All right, interesting, scary story. Got a few facts for you to learn. But have we learned something already, Dave?
We may have.
I guess there's only one way to find out. Eerie House Radio proudly presents a Garless Moral of the Story.
Well, apologies, Degar. It seems you can't even keep a dead woman's skull from screaming at you, even after death. Okay.
What's your problem, Bobble?
Yeah, it looked better on paper before I read it out loud.
All right. So a little few more facts here. The movie, The Screaming Skull, was based on a Frances Marion Crawford horror story of the same name, which, by the way, drew its inspiration from folklore surrounding the so-called Screaming Skull that was kept on display at Bettiscombe Manor in Dorset, England. The skull is said to have belonged to a slave who was refused a burial in his native country following his death, and there were strange occurrences and unexplainable shrieking noises that came from the wooden box in which the skull was kept. And that was the inspiration or pastiche of the Screaming Skull movie. Okay, it's different enough from this Canadian version to maybe be a different source. I could not find anything.
I think they said at the very end that I think it was the same person that the story was based on. Foggs, check with Foggs, see if that was right, because Foggs is pretty good at listening in on that. I just looked at the cast and everything, and it doesn't say it on this thing, but I'm pretty sure that's what it said at the very end of that. You know what? When we get into our next tale, I can play the end of it here on my computer and find out for sure. But we're talking about the last 20 seconds of that second part is where they said it was based on. And I'll give that a listen to from here. And then we'll be able to confirm or deny at that point.
There you go. And, of course, we continue with Tales of Skulls. We've got a next one here. We've had this show on a couple times before. Mr. Keene, Tracer of Lost Persons.
Yeah, and I find it kind of interesting because what I didn't really realize that about this show is that how long it was a part of there. It is actually probably the longest-running detective radio series in the history of radio, starting in 1937 and went on for 18 years and a total of, where was it? 1,690 nationwide broadcast. You look at that and compare it to the others. The second most was Nick Carter, Master Detective, which I'm not real fond of. He's had a few good shows. But there were only 726 broadcasts of that. The Adventures of Sherlock Holmes, we're talking in old radio time, there have been adaptions since, 657. The Adventures of the Falcon, 473. But only 59 of the 1,690 episodes are actually available out there. So there are shows that are like a, there's more shows not available of, say, the Sherlock Holmes, certainly, and of the Nick Carter and of the Falcon. All three of those have more shows that have survived. But they were actually, I had no idea that he was the longest running. And part of the thing was in 1952, they were half-hour programs. 1952, they also did five-part Monday through Fridays as well as a 30-minute program. So that helps when you're doing six episodes a week, it kind of helps add to the numbers. But very interesting.
Yeah, Dave, I don't mind admitting before I started working with you here on Erie House, I never heard of Mr. Keene. It's just not one of those that had such a broad appeal, like The Shadow, like Inner Sanctum, like Suspense, like CBS Radio Mystery Theater.
Right. Even though it was on for so long, and it was on different networks, but most of the time it's been on CBS. But yeah, so it's to me it's just unbelievable the length of this. It's I have a couple things when we get to the end of it about some satires of Mr. Keene, or some references to it from other shows. Even Hitchcock himself referenced Mr. Keene in more than one of his, in at least one of his television shows. So we'll get to I'll get to that later in the broadcast. But this is another interesting case, and this one is here from 1950. It went on for another 5 years after this particular episode, but very interesting. About four guys total throughout the run of it played Mr. Keene, the kindly old investigator, as he was called. And of course, he had his assistant, Mike Clancy. So a good old Irish tough guy who would always beat up everybody to get the answers for Mr. Keene or be there to protect Mr. Keene, because he was the kindly old investigator.
Yes, sir. And let's go ahead with part one. This one is from
June 15th, 1950.
Time once again for Mr. Trace, keener than most persons. Today the
Oops.
It's just time now for Mr. Keene, tracer of lost person. Ladies and gentlemen, Aniston and Kalinos present Mr. Keene, tracer of lost person, one of the most famous characters of American fiction in one of radio's most thrilling dramas. Tonight and every Thursday at the same time, the famous old investigator takes from his file and brings to us one of his most celebrated missing persons cases. Tonight's transcribed case is entitled The Skull and Crossbones Murder Case. Crossbones Murder Case. Our scene opens in a handsome mansion that fronts both fashionable Fifth Avenue and a side street in New York. An elderly man and his young wife are just finishing their dinner and are being served by a housekeeper, a woman with graying hair. The diners are eating quietly, but somehow there's an air of brooding in the large and well-furnished dining room, as if in prophecy of trouble.
Will you have a piece of pie, Mr. Barker?
No, thank you, Emily.
But it's your favorite pie, Lemuel. Aren't you feeling well?
I'm quite all right, Audrey. I'll just have some coffee.
I'll pour it for you, Mr. Barker.
Thank you, Emily.
Lemuel, something's been bothering you this evening.
Not really, my dear.
I wish you'd tell me. I can see you're worried.
Let's finish our coffee, Audrey, and we'll discuss it inside. Frankly, I have something on my mind.
Audrey, it's coffee. Lemuel,
what's the matter? Lemuel!
What's happened, Mrs. Barker?
My husband, he's fainted.
His eyes. Mrs. Barker, look at his eyes. He hasn't fainted. He's dead.
When the police took my husband's body for an autopsy, Mr. Keene, they found he'd been poisoned. A very powerful poison had been put in the coffee he drank. A poison that reacted in a matter of seconds.
Well, you were fortunate not to have drunk some of that poisoned coffee yourself, Mrs. Barker.
Well, Emily Cross, our housekeeper, served Lemuel, my husband, first. He'd drunk his coffee before I was starting to drink mine. Otherwise, I wouldn't be here now telling you and your partner, Mr. Clancy, my story, and asking for your help.
And the police believe it was not accidental poisoning, but murder?
Yes, Mr. Keene. And they believe they have a suspect in the case, but they have to find her first.
Are you referring to your housekeeper?
Yes. Emily Cross left the house before the police arrived, and she hasn't been seen since.
Well, sure, that's pretty good proof that she's trying to hide something.
Yes, Mike, it is.
Mr. Keene, I've come here to ask you to help find Emily Cross. I owe it to my husband to do everything I can to find his murderer and do justice to his memory. A memory that I'll always keep with me as long as I live.
You were fond of your husband, weren't you, Mrs. Barker?
We hadn't been married very long, Mr. Keene, only a year, but it was one of the happiest years of my life. If I knew 1 week ago what I know now, maybe I could have saved him. But he only tried to tell me when it was too late.
Your husband tried to tell you what, Mrs. Barker?
The evening Lemuel was poisoned, he seemed to be very worried about something.
Yes, yes, you mentioned that before.
After the police came, Mr. Keene, we found out what was on his mind. In his pocket was a small label, and on the label was a picture of his skull and crossbones.
Saints preserve us. A skull and crossbones? Where did it come from?
My husband had evidently gotten it as a warning, Mr. Clancy, and that's what he was worried about.
Do you have that label by any chance, Mrs. Barker?
Police have it, Mr. Keene.
All right, I'll check with them about it.
Police feel that it might have been sent to my husband by Emily Cross, our housekeeper, as part of some kind of a blackmailing scheme.
How did they come to that conclusion?
Well, I had to tell them the truth about Emily, even though I knew how bad it would make things look for her.
The truth?
She'd been keeping house for Lemuel for 11 years. Lemuel came to New York originally from Nevada, where he made a fortune in silver and retired when he was about 45. He bought the townhouse on Fifth Avenue and lived in it alone until a year ago when he married me. Emily Cross and another servant took care of the house.
I see.
Before our marriage, Lemuel had been a bachelor, and I think Emily had hoped that one day, well...
That he'd marry her?
Yes, Mr. Keene. I knew Emily resented me from the very beginning, although she never dared to show it. For my part, I tried to get along with her, knowing that Lemuel wanted peace and quiet in his home.
In other words, Mrs. Barker, the police think the housekeeper, Emily Cross, wanted to marry your husband for his money. And when she failed, she tried to blackmail him out of a large sum.
That's what they think, Mr. Keene.
Well, sure, there might be more than one angle to it, boss.
I agree with my partner, Mrs. Barker. This case may not be as simple as it sounds. Now, what about your husband's friends and acquaintances? Do you know of anyone who bore a grudge against him?
Oh, no, Mr. Keene, no one. Lemuel led a quiet life and a simple one in spite of our wealth. He had only one living relative, a nephew named Peter Hunt. Certainly, Peter had nothing but respect and gratitude for his uncle. Lemuel had been very generous with Peter financially, even setting him up in a business for himself.
Tell me, was the nephew Peter Hunt mentioned in your husband's will?
I don't know, Mr. Keene. The will hasn't been read yet. It's only been 24 hours since Lemuel's murder, and I haven't even spoken to our attorneys yet.
Well, I'm going to pay a visit to your home this afternoon, Mrs. Barker, after I've contacted the police and learned what they've discovered. Meanwhile, suppose you wait at home for me and try to keep calm and patient.
Oh, yes. Just knowing that you're going to help the police solve this case is enough to ease my mind, Mr. Keene. I can't tell you how grateful I am.
You can expect to see us again around 5 this afternoon, Mrs. Barker.
Very well. And thank you again. Goodbye, Mr. Clancy.
So long, Mrs. Barker.
Goodbye, Mr. Keene.
Goodbye.
And sure, the way it looks from here, Mr. Keene, that housekeeper, Emily Cross, has got a lot of explaining to do.
Well, it seems to me, Mike, that anyone who deliberately planned a murder of this kind would be a little more careful. When a man is poisoned by food or drink, the first one who comes under suspicion is the person who prepared it for him. Now, Emily Cross, the housekeeper, must have known that. And yet...
I get it, boss. Mr. Keene's office.
Is this Mr. Keene?
No, this is his partner, Mike Clancy.
Please put Mr. Keene on the telephone. It's very important.
Well, who's this calling?
My name is Emily Cross.
Just a second. Boss, it's Emily Cross, the housekeeper the police are looking for.
Let me take it, Mike. Hello? Hello? Hello?
What's the trouble, boss?
I think she's hung up, Mike. Hello?
Well, she told me her name was Emily Cross, Mr. Keene, and she sounded scared.
She either wanted my help or there was something she wanted to reveal. She may have lost her courage at the last moment. At any rate, Mike, it may prove one thing. This case doesn't begin and end with Emily Cross. Not if she would take a chance on calling me, knowing she is wanted for murdering Lemuel Barker.
Well, I guess we'd better report that phone call to the police, Mr. Keene.
Yes, I intend to. And after that, we'll visit Lemuel Barker's Fifth Avenue mansion and begin our investigation there.
Barker's home certainly is a showplace, Mr. Keene. Look at the size of it.
One of those old mansions formerly owned by a New York millionaire, Mike.
Mr. Keene, look. There's someone at the ground floor window, looking out into the street.
A young man. I wonder if that's Lemuel Barker's nephew, Peter Hunt.
He's turned away from the window now.
Well, let's go in, Mike. Mike, there's a letter here on the doorstep, partly under the door.
Oh, I have it, Mr. Keene. It's addressed to Mrs. Audrey Barker.
Yes?
We've come to see Mrs. Barker.
Oh, you must be Mr. Keene and Mr. Clancy. Audrey told me you were coming. Please come in, gentlemen. My name's Ted Garrett. I am a friend of the family. Here's Audrey now.
Oh, Mr. Keene, Mr. Clancy, I'm glad to see you. I don't believe you've met Ted Garrett.
We've just introduced ourselves, Audrey, and now I've got to run along. Remember, if there's anything I can do...
You've been wonderful, Ted. I can't tell you how much you've helped me in every way.
Well, at least I know I'm leaving you in good hands with Mr. Keene. I'll call you in a day or so, Audrey.
Very well, Ted.
Glad to have met you, Mr. Keene. Mr. Clancy.
Likewise.
Good day, Mr. Garrett.
Ted Garrett worked for my husband as a private secretary at one time, Mr. Keene. He left Lemuel for another position right after our marriage.
He's a strikingly handsome young man.
Yes, he is. He's been urged to make a career of the stage, but it doesn't seem to interest him.
Oh, here's a letter for you, Mrs. Barker. We found it outside your door.
A letter? Well, I don't recognize the handwriting. Excuse me, I'll open it.
Well, Mike, we'd better examine the kitchen.
Mr. Keene.
What is it?
Look what I found inside this envelope.
Yes, preserve us. It's a picture of a skull and crossbones.
Let me see that, Mrs. Barker.
Mr. Keene, it's the same warning my husband received before he was murdered. It means I'm marked for death, too.
Well, now, take it easy, Mrs. Barker. No one's going to harm you as long as we're here.
Look at this skull and crossbones, Mike. You recognize it?
Well, it looks like one of them labels you find on a bottle of iodine or some other poison when you buy it at the druggist.
That's exactly what it is. It was taken from a bottle of poison, but it wasn't an iodine bottle. The label's too large for that. Mrs. Barker, where is the kitchen?
Come with me, Mr. Keene.
There's a service entrance to this house, isn't there, Mrs. Barker?
Yes, there are two. Part of the house fronts on the side street, and both the doors are there. One is for tradesmen and one for servants. This is the door to the kitchen and pantry, Mr. Keene.
We'll have to make a systematic search through all the cabinets, Mike. Suppose you start...
What was that?
Sounded like a door slamming.
Well, it may have been one of the bedroom doors upstairs, Mr. Keene. When a door is left open up there, a draft often slams it shut.
Is anyone upstairs?
I don't think so.
Maybe I'd better have a look, boss.
Yes, Mike, go ahead.
Oh, Mr. Keene, you think there may be someone else in the house?
Well, if there is, we'll find out soon enough, Mrs. Barker. And I'll keep my gun handy, just in case. Stand where you are, young fella.
What?
Don't move or I'll shoot.
Who are you?
That's a question you'll answer first.
If you're a thief...
I'm a private investigator, mister. My name is Mike Clancy. What's yours?
Oh, Peter Hunt.
Peter Hunt? You're Mr. Barker's nephew, eh?
Yes.
Well, what are you doing up here snooping around the hall?
I dropped in for some things. I left here several weeks ago when I spent a weekend with Uncle Lemuel and his wife. Would you mind putting that gun away? It frightens me.
Well, you could have told Mrs. Barker you were here. Come on downstairs with me, young fella.
I'm in a hurry. I mean, get out of my way.
Come back here. What's up, Mike? Look out, Mr. Keene. He's running for the stairs.
Just a moment, young man. Let's go of me.
All right, boss. I'll handle it from here.
Let me go, do you hear?
Stay put, I say.
Oh, you're tearing my clothes.
Be quiet or I'll use my gun on you.
All right, Mike. Let him go. Who is this young man?
Well, he says he's Mr. Barker's nephew, boss.
Peter Hunt, look what you've done. You pulled my coat sleeve off and torn my shirt.
So I see. Mike, look at his right forearm.
Mr. Keene.
What's the matter? What are you looking at? It's only a tattoo on my arm.
Yes, a tattoo of a skull and crossbones. Mike, it's a replica of that label. Something tells me that Emily Cross, the housekeeper, isn't the only one in this case who has to do a great deal of explaining.
In just a moment, we'll return to Mr. Keene and the Skull and Crossbones murder case.
But first, it's us.
I know some of the stories I've heard he's been sponsored by Wrigley's Gum. So we'll just say he's being sponsored by Wrigley's Gum in 1950.
Yep. And I think offline there, Dave made a little discovery that confirms that
yes.
The movie, The Screaming Skull, and the CBC, Canadian Broadcasting Mystery Theater, Screaming Skull, came from the same source. The stories are largely different, in my opinion, and
yep.
Probably neither are like the novel by Francis Marion, what was her last name?
Crawford. Crawford, yes. Yep. And you know, we kind of had a chat online while it was going on, and you said it was so different, and I said, yeah, an adaption is someone's take on it, which is why I come and watch why there are so many versions of Planet of the Apes, and you responded with...
Yeah, I Am Legend. You know, we had
and
Vincent Price version, Richard, which was, what's the name of that one? Last Man on Earth.
Last Man on Earth, yeah.
Then the Charlton Heston version, Omega Man.
Mega Man, right.
And finally, Will Smith in I Am Legend are all taken from a story, I Am Legend by Richard Matheson.
Right. Who wrote the second most amount of Twilight Zone episodes?
We'll have to have
only
a Richard
second.
Matheson night sometime.
Yeah, we'll have to find stories by Richard Matheson to try and tie them in.
Because we could probably do Robert Bloch and Richard Matheson and a few of the great writers.
Good idea. Wonderful idea. Ooh, time to go hunting. Time to go hunting.
Good ideas are like a happy accident for me.
But, yeah. So we got good old kindly investigator Mr. Keene looking into this. And
a deep preview.
You were just teasing them. Teasing
yes.
them, I say.
Yes, yes.
But, you got to... if you haven't figured it out yet, and you probably haven't, it's not real evident who the killer is. So it's very
interesting.
I think
I have an idea, but I don't want to play spoiler. And I could be wrong, and I don't want to make an ass of myself more than I usually do. So...
yeah, you need a lot more caffeine than that for that. Yeah.
Mr. Keene is at it again. And since we do have a whole lot of radio and very little time, let's wrap up. Make sure it's the right one, Dale. Mr. Keene, Chaser of Lost Persons, The Skull and Crossbones Murder Case.
Now back to Mr. Keene and The Skull and Crossbones Murder Case. Mr. Keene, the famous investigator, and his partner Mike Clancy are investigating the death by poison of wealthy Lemuel Barker. There have been two suspects uncovered thus far. One of them is Mr. Barker's housekeeper, Emily Cross, who is still at large and being sought by the police. And the other is a young nephew of the victim's, Peter Hunt,
who has just been apprehended in the victim's Fifth Avenue home. Now, as Mr. Keene and Mike continue to question Peter Hunt.
I may as well tell you that you're under suspicion for the murder of your uncle, Lemuel Barker.
No, I didn't kill him. Anyway, who are you to accuse me?
My name is Keene. This is my partner, Mike Clancy.
Maybe you've heard them names before, mister.
Mr. Keene, a great investigator? Well, I didn't know.
Before your uncle was poisoned to death, someone sent him a warning. It was the skull and crossbones from the label on a poison bottle. A few minutes ago, Audrey Barker, your uncle's wife, received the same warning in a letter.
And now we find a tattoo of a skull and crossbones on your forearm, young fella.
This tattoo was made years ago as a joke, when I was a kid. I've grown to loathe it, but it's almost impossible to get rid of a tattoo mark once you have it on your body.
You're telling us. I'll bet dollars to donuts you'd have gotten rid of it fast if you could.
You can't believe that this tattoo on my arm has anything to do with those skull and crossbone warnings and my uncle's murder. It's just a coincidence, I tell you.
Peter, you still haven't explained what you're doing here in your uncle's house.
I told Mr. Clancy before. I came back for something I'd left here several weeks ago.
What was it?
Nothing important, Mr. Keene.
Such you, Mike.
No, wait. I'll show you what I took. You'll find it on me anyway, I guess. Here.
Mr. Keene, to cancel check.
No, it's not canceled, Mike. It's marked no funds. It was made out to Lemuel Barker for $5,000, and it's signed by Peter Hunt. What's the story behind this check, Peter?
Would you believe me if I tell you?
Well, you've got little to lose one way or another, since you're in a very bad spot already.
A week before my uncle was murdered, Mr. Keene, he found out I'd taken some money from his house safe here. I knew the combination.
You took the money or stole it?
I admit it was a theft, Mr. Clancy, but I was in trouble. Lots of trouble. A few months ago, Uncle Lemuel had staked me to $8,000 to go into business. Instead, I took the money and gambled it away.
Go on, Peter.
I gambled the money away and went into debt for $5,000 more. So I stole the $5,000 from Uncle Lemuel's safe to cover myself.
And your uncle found out about it?
Yes, Mr. Keene. He was furious. So furious, I thought he was going to turn me over to the police. So I lied to him. I told him I'd put the money in my own bank account. Hadn't used it yet.
So you wrote out a check for him. A check you knew was worthless.
That's right, Mr. Keene. Oh, I've learned my lesson all right. But it was a little too late. Uncle Lemuel called me and told me about the bad check. Then he gave me 24 hours to make it up to him. Called me ungrateful. Said I hadn't deserved all the help and affection he'd given me in the past. I suppose it was. Anyway, the next thing I knew, I was told that Uncle Lemuel was murdered. So I wanted to get that bad check back in case...
In case the police found it and concluded that because of it you'd murdered your uncle? I'm afraid your story only makes things more difficult for you, Peter.
Mr. Keene, you've got to believe me. I didn't murder my uncle.
Peter, what's the matter?
Aunt Audrey, back me up. They think I murdered Uncle Lemuel.
Oh, no, Mr. Keene, no. Peter was very devoted to Lemuel. I believe in his innocence.
Circumstances happen to be against him, however. Mrs. Barker, what have you got there in your hand?
The bottle of poison you were looking for, Mr. Keene. When you left the kitchen, I continued to search for it, and I found it. It's a form of poison we used once to kill ants in the kitchen, and the label is missing.
The label was one of these skull and crossbone warnings that was sent to you and your husband. That's your telephone, isn't it, Mrs. Barker?
Oh, yes, there's an extension up here in the bedroom, Mr. Keene.
Well, perhaps you better let me answer it. Mike, take Peter Hunt downstairs and remain with him.
Move along, young fella, and no funny business.
Hello?
Is this Mr. Keene?
Yes.
Oh, this is Ted Garrett. Glad you're still there at Audrey Barker's house. I'm calling from my apartment. Emily Cross, the housekeeper, just came to me for help.
She's with you now, Mr. Garrett?
Yes. I persuaded her to talk to you.
How soon can you bring her over here to Mrs. Barker's home?
10 minutes. I have my car.
All right, come over immediately.
Okay, sir.
Mrs. Barker, Emily Cross, your housekeeper, seems to have given herself up.
She's with Ted Garrett?
Yes, they're coming over right now. Meanwhile, I want you to show me just where you found this poison bottle. Maybe the clue I'm looking for. The clue that'll break this case and identify your husband's murderer.
I found that poison bottle right here, Mr. Keene. In this cabinet with these other bottles. They're mostly cleaning fluids.
Are they, Mrs. Barker? Do you know anything about poisons?
No, nothing at all.
When you wanted to get rid of those ants that invaded your home, who bought the bottle of poison?
Why, Emily Cross, the housekeeper, did. She told me she was going to, She handles everything connected with the kitchen.
I see.
Well, boss, Ted Garrett's here with the housekeeper, Emily Cross.
All right, Mike. I'll go in and see them at once. Where is Peter Hunt?
In the study, boss.
Well, perhaps you better stay with him while I talk to Emily Cross. And Mrs. Barker, I think you'd better be there with me when I do.
I know how it looks to me, Mr. Keene, but I didn't murder Mr. Barker.
Then why did you run away, Emily?
I ran away because I was afraid. I thought the police would suspect me. When I gave myself up to Mr. Garrett, I did it because I couldn't stand hiding like an animal anymore.
You tried to reach me before by phone, Emily?
Yes, Mr. Keene, but I lost my nerve and I hung up. Then later I thought of Mr. Garrett. He was good to me when he worked as Mr. Barker's secretary. And I thought he might help me some way.
I just can't believe it, Emily. You are a woman Mr. Barker trusted.
Mr. Garrett, you think I murdered him too?
Emily, I have an envelope here and a picture of a skull and crossbones sent to Mrs. Barker. Is the address on this letter in your handwriting?
No, Mr. Keene. No. I never sent that letter.
Mrs. Barker.
Yes, Mr. Keene.
I'm afraid I must ask you to do something rather distasteful.
What is it?
I have a warrant here in my pocket. I want you to sign it and then I'll fill it out. It's for Emily Cross's arrest on a charge of murdering your husband.
Oh, no. No.
Emily Cross is fainting, Mr. Keene.
Help her to that couch in the next room, Mr. Garrett. And get her some water.
All right. I will.
Mrs. Barker, you can use my pen. Will you sign this paper, please?
Yes, Mr. Keene.
And now your address underneath. That's fine, Mrs. Barker.
Why, Mr. Keene, I thought you said that this was a warrant for Emily Cross's arrest. It's only a blank piece of paper.
Yes, but an important one. It proves to me that Emily Cross is innocent.
Emily is innocent?
Yes, Mr. Garrett. It was Audrey Barker, Lemuel's wife, who poisoned him.
Are you out of your mind, Mr. Keene?
Far from it, Mrs. Barker. You made a slip a few minutes ago when you brought me that bottle of poison. Of course, you didn't realize
it. What do you mean?
You told me you knew nothing about poison, and that Emily Cross handled everything in the kitchen. Yet you picked out the one bottle of poison in that cabinet correctly, even though there were several bottles inside with no labels on them.
But it was just by chance, that's all.
No, not by chance. You knew which was which, Mrs. Barker, because you used this bottle of ant poison to murder your husband. You knew the bottle all too well.
No. No, that's a lie.
This blank piece of paper I gave you to sign will prove my theory completely. The handwriting is exactly the same as the handwriting on the envelope, which you sent to yourself, enclosing a skull and crossbones warning, like you sent your husband before his death.
Audrey, is it true?
Ted, don't look at me that way.
Mike?
Yes, Mr. Keene?
You have your handcuffs with you?
I sure do, sir.
A murderess?
You, Audrey?
Oh, you fool, Ted. I only did so we could be together.
So that we could?
When you left Emil's employ, I knew it was because you thought you were falling in love with me. And I was crazy about you, Ted. Couldn't you see?
Is that true, Mr. Garrett?
Yes, Mr. Keene.
I left Mr. Barker when he married Audrey.
But I swear I had nothing to do with this horrible crime.
There was more to it than love to you, I think. Lemuel Barker was years older than his wife. And she's a beautiful woman. She could have married many younger and handsomer men. But she chose one with money instead.
I could kill you, King.
You planned your husband's murder, Mrs. Barker, knowing you'd inherit his wealth. And believing you could later marry Ted Garrett. But you made one mistake too many.
Did I?
You came to me trying to use me as a foil to throw suspicion on an innocent woman, Emily Cross. It was all part of your scheme. But you'll find that by coming to me, you only provided it a noose around your own neck. Put the handcuffs on her, Mike.
No. No, you won't.
There's no use of putting up a fight, lady. It's all over.
We'll be able to tell the housekeeper, Emily Cross, that she's free of all suspicion. And instead, Audrey Barker will face the judge and jury for her husband's murder.
And so Mr. Keene finds the solution to the Skull and Crossbones murder case. Mr. Keene, Tracer of Lost Persons, is based on the novel, Mr. Keene.
The radio sequel is originated and produced by Frank and Ann Hummert. Dialogue by Lawrence Klee. Directed by Richard Leonard. Bennett Kilpack plays Mr. Keene. It is on the air every Thursday at this time. Don't miss Mr. Keene next Thursday. Ever suffer heartburn or upset stomach from acid indigestion? Safe, new Bisodol mints, medically proven, quickly rid stomach of that blown-up feeling. Give longer-lasting relief than baking soda. Yes, hours of relief. Bisodol mints not only neutralize, but actually carry away excess stomach acid. Soothe irritated stomach lining. Let you sleep all night long when acid indigestion strikes. Carry new Bisodol mints for fast relief. Anywhere, anytime. Mr. Keene, Tracer of Lost Persons, will be on the air next Thursday at this same time. This is Larry Elliott saying goodbye for Mr. Keene and the Whitehall Pharmacal Company, makers of Anacin and Collinose, and many other dependable high-quality drug products. This program was transcribed. This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
And this is Dale Kay along with Dave Binkley here in Erie House.
Yes. With a guaranteed better moral than last time. That wouldn't take much.
Yeah, we'll see. Erie House Radio probably resents a garlic.
Apologies to Brother Gar. If you're an older guy and you marry a killer-looking wife, you may just have married just that. There you go.
Quiet, numbskulls. I'm broadcasting.
Hey, I did want to talk about some of the other references real quick. The character of Mr. Keene was referenced by Alfred Hitchcock in one episode of TV shows, according to Alfred Hitchcock Presents Companion by Patrick Wilkinson and Martin Grahams Jr. Keene was also mentioned in the stage version of Bye Bye Birdie by the character Mr. Harry McAfee, who also was played by Paul Lynn. That was taken out for the movie. In the Honeymooners sketch Razor Blades, appearing October 12, 1951 episode of Cavalcade of Stars, Ralph Cramden cannot find his razor blades. When he questions Alice Cramden about it, she responds, "What am I? Mrs. Keene, tracer of lost razor blades?" And, of course, let's see, it was combined with another radio program, Martin Kane, Private Detective, and satirized by Harvey Kurtzman and Jack Davis in Mad Magazine's fifth issue, June and July of 1953, as Kane, Private Eye.
And that's Magazine was still in comic book format.
Right. And then, of course, there were the two and only Bob and Ray with their parody and several episodes of Mr. Trace Keener Than Most Persons, which was what Dale teased you with a little earlier in the broadcast.
Yes, yes, that was deliberate, of course. And now, here's the real thing. With the father of Chris Elliott, Bob Elliott, along with his partner.
That's
Ray.
Right.
Time once again for Mr. Trace, Keener Than Most Persons. Today, the surly old investigator is taking from his files the case marked Unsolved. As we look in on the old investigator now, we find he's standing by his desk.
I think I'll sit down here at my desk, Spike. It's been a long and arduous day so far.
Saints for Sabbath, boss. What are you up to now?
I was just looking over this file marked Unsolved. One of baffling cases that's ever come across my desk.
I know, boss. That's why we've had such difficulty trying to figure out how it all happened, boss.
Well,
we don't even know who committed the crime. We don't even know who the poor person was that was so murdered, boss. Safe as
that. that's just it. What did you say, Spike?
Saints preserve us.
That's just it. We don't know who saw or did the crime. We haven't anything to go on. We can't solve it without clues, can we?
Well, I'm passionate about that, Keen. I know I've been traced plenty of times, but I've never known any Lockter like that.
No, well, unless we jeepo, we certainly won't be able to discover who did the crime.
Saints preserve us, boss. You catching cold now.
Have we had any phone calls from suspicious-sounding people? By that I mean, has the phone rung this morning?
No, boss. Not since I've been here, and I've been here since 9 o'clock, boss. Saints preserve us, the phone hasn't rung it. One ring, boss, all day.
Well, if the phone is rung, we've stopped
tonight. The phone is ringing now, boss.
You would have been here.
Why don't I be after it? Hello! State your business. This is Mr. Trace. He's keener than most persons.
Tell them whose office they're speaking to, Spike.
I guessed it. Saints for his office.
What is it, Spike?
You better talk to Mr. Trace. I'm just his associate.
Be on the phone. Hello, Trace on the line. My assistant, Spike Delancey, who's been with me for a good many years, tells me that this is something I should talk to you about, whoever you are there on the other end of the line.
Mr. Jeepo?
Yes, I'm lost.
I'm a very, very old person, Mr. Jeepo, and I've called for your advice.
Sound as if you're in trouble.
Well, I'm lost, sir.
Lost?
Like everyone in my whole family here is lost.
Why, that sounds like a case that's very familiar to me. One I have on my desk at this very moment.
How?
The case marked unsolved.
You've been listening to another exciting episode of Mr. Trace, Keener Than Most Persons. Today we heard all about the case marked unsolved. Today's episode featured Mr. Trace's assistant, Spike Delancey.
Well, that's a fun spoof you brought us, Steve.
There are more there. There are more there. The other one was a little bit more fun, but there will be more to come, which I'm sure will be also better than that. But it's still fun. It's great to hear those two. As I was telling you before we went on the air, much of the early radio, which was mostly my brother and myself, of weirdness, was so much influenced by the Bob and Ray. You know, yeah, we had the influences of Stan Freberg and all these other guys, but it was really Bob and Ray that was for our radio influence that we did many of our sketch interviews on, that kind of a thing.
Yep, and I remember a lot of people having Bob and Ray albums with cuts from the radio show.
Yeah. Yeah.
Good times, good times. Well, pop a nickel in real quick, Dave. I got
okay, here's my nickel. I had it to spend, and there it is. I'm handing it to you and putting it in the commercial jukebox right now.
Columbus, we can't turn back without an order from you.
I'm not talking while the flavor lasts.
What are you chewing?
Peach nut gum. We could be in for a long voyage.
Yes, we could. Thank you, peach nut gum. All right, next weekend, we are getting rocks falling out of the heavens. That's right, it's going to be raining stones with Lights Out, the Meteor Man. One of the few I'm very familiar with, and you'll find it. A creepy sci-fi tale. Then Vanishing Point with Meteor. That's on Friday. Saturday, it's the return of CBS Radio Mystery Theater with The Meteorite. And that'll be Saturday at 6:30. East.
Yep, The Vanishing Point is another program out of Canada. Many times it was kind of called a radio's version, or certainly Canada's radio version, of The Twilight Zone.
Yes, and we'll have that here on Friday, along with Meteor Man.
Don't have much time.
Are you going to be on the Vortex Monday?
Monday on the Vortex. We're in this really bad movie. Holly and Sue and I will be doing the President's Mystery film from the McKinley Monument in Canton, Ohio, where William McKinley and his wife Ida are buried. So it's the President's Mystery Monday, 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. on the Vortex, horrorhost.net.
And keep your ears open for more news on Spaceship One flying your way and seeing us at Goularty Fest this coming October. Just, gosh, it's probably like about 4 or 5 weeks away.
Yeah.
I'll be seeing you there.
Coming too soon.
And unfortunately, the show ends too soon. We'll see you next weekend.
The castle lights are growing dim. There's no one left but me and him. When next we meet in Frankenstone, don't come alone.
Ooh.
I knew I was going to miss him blowing out the candle, so did you hear me?
Yeah, I did. Everything but the puff there. Everything but the puff. So there you have it. There you have it. We've got made it through another weekend.
Yep. Made it through. Had to type a quick thanks, folks, for our chatters in the chat, and join us live here in our wonderful radio shows.
Yep, we always enjoy having people there. Hey, Dale, when we leave tonight, I want to call you for a quick call, if that's possible, just so that you know.
Secret stuff!
It doesn't have something to do with this, but it does have something to do with something coming up soon. So I just wanted to... But I'll call you about that.
Yeah, we got to scheme some Halloween too. But yes, I'll be all ears and attentive.
Yes, it was fun having Gar back last night. But I just Gar texted me and said, "Hey, Dave, I hope you didn't step on your toes." And I told him, "No, brother, everything was great. I'm so glad to have you back, and you're feeling well." And but he was a hoot and a holler, and definitely on the edge of reality last night. So,
and as far as stepping on toes, he can put on some hobnail boots when he's on fire like that. He was a lot of fun.
Yeah. You just step back and let him dance. Yeah.
Until the clock runs out. But
if you're listening in the archives and you did not catch yesterday's show, please go back in the archive. Hear the return of Gar on the Erie House Radio, and you'll hear this guy on fire. Yes, he is.
Never mind, please. Just do it. No. That reminds me. I need a cigarette. God.
Well, if you smoke one, maybe I'll stop coughing. I don't know.
Yeah, it could be. Reverse psychiatry. And since I'm ass backwards, that could well be. It's so much fun having a headset back on, to have my hands free, for research and for sound bites and things. It's much better. So much better.
Yeah.
Hope it sounds better.
Well, you sound really clear. It's great. It's great.
Everybody else sounds way better than that on that cheap tinny phone I use down here. It's a landline, but I gotta have one for when the grid goes down and the great apocalypse comes. Us smokers are gonna have an advantage. I keep telling you, we keep fire everywhere we go. Oh, I forgot. The next great apocalypse comes, and I can't wait. I forgot that part of my rant.
Ah, I see.
Looking forward to it.
Oh, my. What a fun weekend this has been. Interesting to find the skulls. Looking up some other things. We got all kinds of things coming up. We got some Alfred Hitchcock movie. Did you get a chance to look at that at all, Dale?
I did. I looked ahead there and...
Got some great Alfred Hitchcock radio drive-ins, and I forget what else I had.
Hypnotic, Fool's Gold Friday. Hey, we're going to do some Westerns, gang.
Yeah, yeah. So we got just so many fun things to just match up and work in. Somehow you can always find a way to lock things in with each other. But yeah.
We got themes on cards, themes on brides, honeymoons. Jeez.
Yeah. Yeah. A
couple of weekends worth of honeymoon. Oh, man, you are a romantic fella, aren't you?
Well, these honeymoons aren't necessarily romantic.
I see 3 weekends
romantic.
Of this stuff.
honeymoons on Inner Sanctum are not necessarily romantic.
I would tell you a story about honeymoons, but I don't want to get in trouble.
Well, you're not at work.
A lot of drive-in theaters coming up.
As he changes the subject.
I don't know what you're talking about. Yeah, the Hitchcock drive-in with the birds and the 39 steps and Suspicion and Notorious and Mr. and Mrs. Smith and Rebecca. Yeah, this is going to be good. A lot of movie drive-ins, gang. Some Dashiell Hammett.
Yeah, I'm looking forward
to that. I'm really starting to appreciate him more the more I find out the depth and length of his work. I mean, I do love his, those comic stories that take place in the 30s.
The Thin Man.
No. Those with Broadway and...
But that's Damon Runyon.
Oh, Damon Runyon.
Right.
I like him too.
Right.
I like him too, but I'm learning more about Dashiell Hammett. I did not know he wrote the Maltese Falcon.
Yes, he's the one that wrote the Maltese Falcon.
Yeah.
So yes. So he created Humphrey Bogart. No. He created Sam Spade.
Now this is Mr. and Mrs. Bogart created Humphrey Bogart.
And he also created the Thin Man, and he created for radio The Fat Man, which also did become a movie. But yes, he created all three of those characters. And The Fat Man originally was a reference from Sam Spade in The Maltese Falcon, where he called Casper Gutman The Fat Man.
Ah, did not know that. Circus story. Oh my God, there's so much stuff here. You have no idea what a busy bee Dave has been. Theming up these radio shows, there's like a year's worth of stuff here.
I think we have like a year. I created almost a half a year's worth of weekends just last weekend. Yeah.
Yeah, I see that. Holy gosh. Or Saints Preserve Us.
As Clancy would say, yes.
Perhaps that's what I meant. Uh-huh.
Well, what I thought was so funny whenever they did the spoof of Bob Ray did the spoof, like every other line was Clancy's, "Saints preserve us, Mr. Keene." You know,
Hey, and I'm just realizing something here, Dave. I'm looking ahead at the calendar, the time change is. Right after Halloween, so that's going to be quite a week.
Yes. Weekend. Yep. I think we got some time travel ones in there. I think.
But we'll be celebrating Halloween the 25th, the 26th, maybe the 27th. I'll have to look at the Brown schedule. The 29th, the 30th, you know, of course, we're going to do War of the Worlds. And of course, Halloween night.
Figures. That's my late night. That is my late night at work. So.
But to allow for Dave and I to do some scheming offline, I would think it's time for the schnoz.
For the schnoz, the good old... Jimmy Durante to say, hey, good night. Mrs. Calabash.
Good night. Good night. It's time to say good night. What more is there to say but good night? We've had a few laughs, and it's time for toodaloo. Arrivo, up we the day, and ink-a-tink-a-do. Good night.
Good night, folks. And good night, Mrs. Calabash, wherever.
Show starts in 3 minutes.
Don't think so.